Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
The other day, walking with my older daughter in a street, there was a homeless man, probably in his 50s, sleeping on the sidewalk with very dirty clothes and blanket, long hair and a long beard. While walking by, we look at each other, and perhaps thinking in my daughter, I move some steps further away from him. And while still looking at each other, he said, "Soy feo, pero no muerdo." That means I'm ugly, but I don't bite. He spoke warmly with some humor in a friendly way. I smiled back and we continued walking to the apartment. We both smiled, but I didn't say anything to him. And once in the apartment, I longed for having talked with him, at least some few words, and to help him in some way. And I felt bad for having moved a couple of steps away from him while walking. It seems that when we meet people, later we often wish that we could have done something different. We may have the feeling that we could have had a better encounter and communication. We may have specific regrets about something we said, that we didn't say, or how we communicated and behaved. In his book, Joyously Through the Days, in a chapter, Enlightened Communication, Les described this feeling, unusual mistakes we may make in communication, as well as how increasing an awareness can reduce them. Mistakes usually arise from assuming that we pay more attention than we do, and that we will recognize the effects of our communication. While we may have emotions, biases, or distractions affecting how we communicate and perceive the other person. Reading from the book, it says, increased awareness is accompanied by increased sensitivity to situations and people. We develop a subjective sense, a wider view of how our words and actions might affect others. Little by little, and after a long time, our practice started showing that it's not something we do naturally, and that in my case, I haven't paid much attention to it many, many times, probably most of my life. Trying to reflect on my experience, in Chile, where I grew up, it's common to talk louder, often with emphasis and intensity. It's common to talk over each other. In a table, for instance, there could be two or more conversations going on at the same time. Telling stories is a usual way to say something, and they can be long. Communicating is more about the talker expressing something than about the other person. In that sense, it's quite self-centered. Is part of the culture and it becomes a habit. It was normal to be more spontaneous than paying much attention to how we communicate. Circumstances can help when meeting someone. They can help us be more aware, sensible, and to focus more on the other person than on us. For instance, when on vacation in a new place, we may communicate better with strangers than when we are busy and in a hurry where we live and routine takes over. In vacation, probably we are more relaxed, curious, and more interested in the people we meet. We change how we communicate. One of the circumstances occurred about 10 years ago. I had to conduct a research project in the poorest neighborhoods of Mexico City, areas where police usually don't enter. The research included knocking on doors and meeting clients of a cell phone company and to try to understand their bad attitude towards the company. It required a special focus on how to meet people known to be angry with this company, with a difficult life, and angry with life in general. Previously, I had done some research with poor people in East Palo Alto and small fishing villages in Chile, which had provided some experience in how to meet them, try to connect with them, and develop mutual trust. This research in Mexico included taking some pictures, and I would like to share a few that portrays the effect of meeting people when we are more focused than usual, even if this focus came from work instead of spiritual practice. These photos were taken a few moments after they opened the doors and we introduced ourselves. They were upset and didn't want to meet and answer questions. Let me see how to share a screen. So these are face-to-face meetings in the worst Mexico's cities, in Mexico City's neighborhood. He was very angry, and he was the angriest one. He didn't like at all being interrupted and someone knocking his door without any previous calling or anything. He didn't want to talk, he didn't want to answer questions, and he was just upset. He was not angry. Actually, I remember when I look at him, he's a young man, but I perceive him like a kid. He looked sad, and you could see that he has not an easy life. And he got nervous more than angry. He got anxious, nervous. He didn't like to answer questions either. He was angry, but more than angry, he was very defiant. He came out actually with a gun in his back, and he looked at us, asked us, what do we want, and answered just with yes, no, and didn't want to talk. So with each of them, the conversation was about 5 minutes, and more important than the questions that we made, I remember that a main purpose or a main focus was how to make them feel that we were really interested in what they think. We were not saying bad things, thinking bad things about them, but that we were interested in what they had to say and that we respect them. So after 5 minutes, there were reactions. The same person that was very angry, she relaxed. And the overall feeling with this person, with this man, and with the other people was that we went from a very uncomfortable setting where there was no communication to actually a very comfortable one. We feel comfortable, both of us. Same with him. He got relaxed. He was nervous, he was anxious, and he just got relaxed and opened himself. And he was talkative, he answered questions. We were also comfortable. He probably was the most impressive because he went from being very stern or very defiant, actually to be very relaxed, to talk a lot, and to have humor. He made jokes about soccer between Mexico and United States and Chile, and we talked maybe 5-10 minutes, and we could have continued working for a long time, talking with a long time. So beside this person, the previous experience in Chile was this woman. This was a research in probably 2006, 2007. And she was 70, Maria. She was 72 years old. And I learned later that she had a very difficult life. And she didn't want to talk. She hardly say hello. And for about in a year, we met probably three times. And he had always almost the same face. But by keep meeting, then in a couple of days, he changed completely. And he was welcoming, he invited me to his kitchen, we ate food together. So looking at the images bring memories of how an initial encounter of big distrust and aggressivity from the part turned into engaging and comfortable meetings. The experience changed to wanting to continue talking with them, learn more about them, a barrier dropped, and we were comfortable with each other. It also made me remember that I didn't have a script or prepare a thing to say, but the attitude and focus was very different than in a typical day in California. Also, it makes me think how days later or now, that focus and awareness in meeting someone most of the time is not there. It becomes easy to get distracted and not to pay enough attention when talking. Even with those closest to us, such as my wife Lucia or children, they laugh and make jokes because sometimes at the table, for example, I hear something they are saying and ask them, "Como? What?" And they laugh and say, too late, you missed it." That happens when a distracted mind goes wandering. Or when not agreeing on something, it can be very easy to reply with an almost automatic answer or say the same things that have been said before. Rationally, from some experience and now from reading about it, I know that awareness and mindfulness, as in that research, helps making communication better, but it doesn't happen naturally. Our practice sitting develop awareness, and we have many opportunities to practice awareness as relating to meeting people in daily life. Political conversations or discussions, for instance, this day are a good terrain for practice. When living in Alabama, after discussing politics with some friends, parents of our daughter's best friend, I was thinking, how is it possible that they think like that? What world do they live in? But after some months, I realized what good friends they were, how much they care about our daughter, and they think with her that I didn't have the initiative to do with their daughter. And political differences were getting in the way of our friendship. I also realized that yes, we grew up and live in different worlds with different cultures and experiences, which shape us and our view of the world. In some time, we just became similar human beings with different personal histories, and what we have in common became more important than the differences. This changed our communication. When we meet now, we both pay much more attention to what we say and how we say it, with a motivation that creates harmony. Other experiences have not evolved that easily. With some friends, it's difficult to maintain a conversation about politics, for instance. But at least we can start by remembering that despite our differences, we are the same as human beings. We have Buddha nature, and that may help in paying more attention and in not reacting, being more tolerant and in accepting the differences. What is common is larger than our differences. This may start changing the way we communicate, at least from our part, and it may serve as an example. When we meet people, it seems that our minds may automatically trigger emotions, evaluation, judgments, preferences. We naturally may not have the same attitude, for instance, with someone that is familiar than towards someone that we perceive as very different from us. When we chant "Save all beings" in the Rogue chant, it doesn't say "Save all beings except those that are different, or except those that have hurt me, or those that say things I don't agree with." It says "all beings." Save all beings logically sounds impossible, sounds like a koan, but the all may point to an attitude of no differentiation and oneness that would help when meeting people. In the book, Joyously Through the Days, there's another chapter called Love in the Largest Sense. And I was surprised that it is related to communication. Reading some parts of the chapter, Buddhist love is our experience of the oneness of the fundamental nature of all things in the universe. Then it says, Buddhist love is expressed in the way we communicate. Chundu Suzuki expressed it this way. When you listen to someone, you should give up all your preconceived ideas and your subjective opinions. You should just listen to him. Just observe what his way is. We just see things as they are with him and accept them. This is how we communicate with each other. Our practice teaches us that every meeting with another person is an opportunity towards becoming one. It's an opportunity for oneness. In Branching Stream, Flow in the Darkness, in a lecture, Suzuki Roshi said, when you listen to the blue jay, you have to listen to it with your heart. The blue jay has to be in your heart. When you are not disturbed by blue jays will come right into your heart and you will be a blue jay. We could imagine meeting someone with compassion and awareness, so when we listen and talk, we have him or her in our heart, like Suzuki Roshi's blue jay. In the sentence, when you are not disturbed by blue jays will come right into your heart. The first part, when you are not disturbed by blue jays, depends on us. We may learn not to get disturbed by blue jays. Another image of oneness in meeting people could be dancing, a dance. Sometimes a meeting may feel as if we are dancing to different rhythms, each following our own music and rhythm. Without listening to the music and discovering the other person's rhythm and movements, we would step on each other's toes and we would not be able to dance fluidly and with grace. Another point, and it has been my experience, and I never pay my attention to this, is that we may not reflect much on the role of meeting people and communication have in our and other lives. Thich Nhat Hanh said, our communication is what we give to the world and what we leave behind. We communicate when we speak, think, and act. So communication is karma, and every communication bears our signature. He also said, our communication is our continuation. So we may say that our practice helps develop and maintain awareness and mindfulness, enabling us to pay more attention and be more present when meeting people. Meeting people is an opportunity to practice. Does anyone have comments or stories or questions? Hey, hi, Tom.
Can you hear me?
I can, not very well.
Historically, since time immemorial, the basic way human beings communicate, a huge percentage, like 79% of the way we communicate is in body language. Another, something like 10 or 12 is in the intonation of what I just said. Communication is very deep before the word. And this is my comment.
Yeah, thank you, Tom. I'm not an expert, but for what you said, I completely agree. That's what Ferdinand Hahn said, that we communicate even with our thoughts, with our words, with our acts, even with our thoughts. Yeah, thank you.
So I'm a member of, I guess, or a practitioner of Jikoji, and it was brought up by Dan Zigman. He's a computer guy, engineer, but also ordained. He said the Buddha spoke in verse. I'm not sure exactly what that is. Maybe you know, Craig, verse, but I think it's sort of like what we read maybe in the sutra, which is maybe linked to poetry and meter. And I think that I find very curious. We also put so much emphasis on prose, right? Going to school, work, everywhere. I don't know what to think of this. Know what I experience here, one of the, as I said before, the heart of what we do here is being quiet. Sacred silence, and something happens that is precious. The heart of what we do here is not in, and we have the three jewels of the Sangha, and this resonates here in the Zendo, in this artificial environment that resonates with a community, and we can take this out as less gave us to the outside world.
Thank you, Tom. And as a comment, in our practice, for example, we communicate with no words. For example, in my case personally, that was something completely new. And in Sechins, we don't talk except the strictly necessary to experience communication with no words. So what you say is right. Our person, I think that our person, our attitude, how we behave, how we act, how we look at someone.
I'd like to say something. You know, what Todd is talking about, this is Dan.
Hi, Dan.
It's really interesting to me because I don't think of our practice as being about communication. And what you said, I mean, I understood what Thich Nhat Hanh said, but I think of, you know, noble silence as not being about communication. That said, I do think, I mean, our practice, it definitely is about communication, but sitting zazen is not. Yet, you know, if 79% of communication is done with the body, you know, then that communication is embodied. And so there has to be a link, a very direct link. There can be a very direct link between our practice of sitting on a cushion, often with not even anyone next to you, in semi-dark, and then bringing that out in your body when you meet with others. So that kind of made sense to me when you said that, you know, because I've wondered about, this is silent, and I don't always find what we do here to be well communicated either. And I don't necessarily think that the Zen folks that I meet are particularly good communicators, better than others, from what I've seen. Often they're quieter people, for instance, you know, so it's not overtly more communicative, but I don't know, I think something, there's something special for me, what you said about this embodied, you know, our body, people communicating visually with our bodies and our practice being embodied. Yeah.
I didn't say it.
You're just repeating what you heard somewhere, but yeah. And yes, Ernan, what do you think about this thing about sitting in a cushion? I mean, you're talking about communication and the silence and communication.
Mm-hmm. Yes. From what you said and Todd said, one thing is that this is the talk was called meeting people more than communication. So the point is not actual verbal communication at all. It's about meeting people. Mm. Okay, so that's the point. It's about meeting people. Meeting people in what sense? In the sense of seeing the person that is in front of you.
Mm.
So it is about meeting people. I think that we shouldn't conflate communication with talking or communication with writing. I mean, in meeting people, we can communicate with our words. We can communicate with our body. For example, in that picture of the research, I don't remember exactly because nothing was prepared. There was no script. But I do remember that we had to show the person that we trust them and that we care about them. And that when you cannot say it with words, you have to express it. And to express it is by words. So in meeting people, we can meet people without talking. So it's not about the verbal talking. Is the act of meeting someone, if we could say act, and it is about letting someone know that we are there for that person or that we care about the person. For example, it's different if we meet and we both don't pay much attention about us, or if we are more aware, like in a Sechin, we look at each other. In Sechin, we develop awareness naturally over the hours. And if we meet someone, but we are more aware than usually in seeing the person and in letting the person know that we are there for that person. So that's the communication that I was trying to refer to. It's not the talking, it's not the verbal, it is about meeting people. And meeting people can be, for example, with my kid. My kid can be coming from a soccer game and I can be stressed running because I have something in work. And I may say, hi, we cross. And I may not pay attention that he may have a little blood in his knee. or that he can be happy because he won, or sad because he lost, for example. So to grasp those things, that is the communication that I mean. I mean, it's paying more attention, if I could say, is paying more attention both to the other person, but also to us in what we do, what we say or what we don't say, how we look, so the other person can realize that we care about them. And I think that part of that communication would come naturally if we are focused in the moment. I mean, if we practice what we practice in Sasser. I mean, if we bring into meeting with a person our attitude in Sasser, it's different than we are with a cell phone in one hand or running in a, or going in a rush because we have to do something else. So the aspect of communication start with us in paying attention, but also in reflecting what we do to make the other person know that we are there for the person and we care. And this caught my attention because until I think last year, I think I never thought about that in my whole life. So that's what this topic came up because, at least in my case, it's something that I don't used to pay attention. And I think that our practice extends into meeting people. Maybe it's one of the best practices we can do. Every time we meet someone, are we there for them completely or not? Are we seeing that person without biases, with a beginner's mind? For example, one thing that surprised me, I don't remember where I read it, but some time ago, was a person saying that we should meet people sometimes like strangers, even people that we know. Even people that we know very well, as an exercise, we should meet them, we could meet them like strangers. Like, what else can I discover from this person? Is there something that I'm not seeing in this person? So if that is an application of beginner's mind, then maybe meeting person is a natural extension of our practice, or our practice can help us meet people with more awareness, something like that.
Hernan, hello.
Hey, hi, Diane.
Hello. I don't think you can see us, is that right?
Yeah, I can see you now.
Oh, you can see us now.
Yes. Nice to see you, Diane.
Nice to see you too. You look well. You're feeling better with your long COVID.
Yes, thank you.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
Thank you for your talk. As Todd said, I think we communicate a lot through our bodies, our facial expressions, the way we stand, the way we look at someone. But I really appreciate your talk because you emphasized the connection with our practice. I think you're saying when we're sitting, we're fully present, we're fully there. And I think you're saying that our attitude is important, but also that we're fully present with the person we're with. And I think about when my children were growing up and I was busy doing stuff around the house, and I would be listening to them and talking to them, but I would always be doing something, right, while they were talking and I was talking. And I think if we could treat the people we live with, like you said, like you're just meeting them for the first time, or like they're a stranger or a visitor to your house, if we could treat our family members and the people closest to us that way. It's that awareness, and I am very appreciative that that you brought that up. Just to be thinking about that each time we meet someone or we interact with someone. It's a precious moment. So thank you.
Thank you, Ian. And I would say meeting those close to us and trying to meet everyone like that. We may discover wonderful people that we see every day, but we don't know them, and we may discover them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But as you say, the people that are close to us, absolutely. And yes, for a long time, the thing that you're saying that we're thinking, I never thought about it. I always assume that you just communicate spontaneously.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's more than that in being with someone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey, hi, Teresa.
Hola, Hernan. How are you?
Hola, bien, fine. I saw your hand. How are you?
Fine. Sorry, I have a little bit of a cold.
Yes.
So excuse my voice, but thank you very much for your talk. It's a very important topic. I think about it a lot. I see it as a continuous practice, and I learn a lot from the mistakes I make. When I was working as a journalist, I used to record the interviews. Many of the interviews I recorded then to make sure that, you know, I could listen again. I didn't make any mistake when I was writing the articles. And by listening the interviews, many times I realized how I wasn't listening to the person. So I was thinking about the next question that I had prepared, or I was distracted or a little bit stressed out maybe for some reason. So that was a good practice, because I thought, wow, this person was telling me this and I should have asked that, but I didn't because I wasn't fully listening. And I like also that Les stresses a lot in his talks that we should be paying complete attention to the person in front of us, like forgetting ourselves. And it's a good practice, difficult one for me at least, but good practice. In any event, you mentioned that you haven't paid attention to this till last year. You never thought about
yes.
it. Yeah. And so what happened that if you want to share, what happened that made you think about this, that this became important for you? What happened last year?
Thank you, Teresa. Well, first, what you said about not listening when talking with someone, I feel the same. I can imagine how many times we had conversation and I didn't listen. I didn't listen fully. And why last year? I think that there are, let me think. I think there are three reasons, maybe. One is that with politics coming up, I realized that it was very, very difficult to talk with a couple of cousins and a couple of friends in Chile. It became very difficult. And I realized that one of the part was because I had changed a bit, not a lot, but at least a bit, enough for me that the way my friends talk in Chile caught my attention. And I realized that it was very hard to have a conversation, and that I used to be exactly like them. and that I have changed a bit. But thinking about it, I realized that I haven't changed that much, just a bit. And then at home, my daughters, my wife, something told me, you are not listening. And yeah, you are not listening. And then I will stop and realize that, yes, I was not listening. And then I will share the third reason was a conversation with Les. Les made me a couple of questions about this. And that was good thinking. So all the things together, I think was like looking at a mirror and realizing that it is much more important than I ever thought. And that if we don't pay that much attention, we simply miss about the person in front of us. And they miss, and the person in front of us miss about us. And that's a chain. That's a chain. So those are the reasons. And that, for some reason, happened during the last year.
Thank you.
Thank you, Teresa. Hello. Hi, Kevin.
Hello.
How are you?
Thank you. I am doing very well, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly.
I'm sorry about the mask. I am also recovering from COVID, and I'm trying to avoid getting my family sick. Oh,
yes.
Thank you for the talk. One of the motivations for me entering into the practice has been to be more present for the people around me. So this talk was very helpful, so thank you. One thing that I find, at least for me, for the practice that's common with being with people is curiosity. When I'm meditating and I get frustrated, like, oh, I'm thinking about work, I'm thinking about I'm hungry, I'm thinking about this, oh, I'm a bad person, I'm not meditating well. And what made it easier for me is to switch to mindset of, oh, that's interesting, I'm thinking about work, okay. Oh, that's interesting, I'm thinking about my kids or thinking about how my back is sore. And I use the same sort of curiosity when I'm talking to people if the conversation is difficult. When I don't feel they're hearing me, I ask questions, and it only works if I'm really curious about the answer. You can't be asking a question to win a debate. It has to be asking a question and really being curious what's going on. And often when I do that, there's something underneath that we're not talking about that I realize. And so that's something for me that's common between at least my personal practice and like meeting people, really authentically meeting them, is this curiosity. I'm wondering, when you met with these people, is that one of the things that you found too, that being actually curious was what helped sort of being more present? And if not, is there something else that for you from the practice helped you be more present with them?
Well, this is interesting because the first time I started meeting these people in Chile, I was not practicing yet. I mean, I had practiced from 95 to 98, but I was going 2 Wednesdays a week, I mean a month. I didn't go in the mornings, was not very dedicated. And I started, and the first meetings I had in Chile was not part of Zen practice. It was part of a need because I had to do in the research, but also was true interest, true care. I have cared about poor people for a long time, and I like them. I like learning about them, and I feel comfortable with them. So in the research, I found ways how to connect with them and earn mutual trust by trial and error. and by true interest. But what the practice has provided is that when I did that was when I was doing the project. But maybe the same evening, I would go to a cousin's friend and I would behave differently with my friends and my cousins. I didn't pay the attention to them that I paid to the person I was doing research with. I just didn't. And I didn't even realize it, and I didn't see any problem, and it was not a factor. I didn't give a second of thought about it. Now with the practice, I realize the practice have made me realize that fact that I was not paying attention to people with the same attitude all the time or most of the time. Sometimes I was having capacity or capability to connect with people, but then 2 hours later, maybe I didn't pay attention. So what the practice has added is to realize how important it is, and to realize that what we do in Sasen is very similar to what we could do with people. So that's the relevance of the practice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.